Intervju Radija Študent.
Pozdravljeni, z mano je danes Hans Martens, s katerim bomo danes izvedli intervju v sklopu projekta DigiDR. Namen projekta je krepitev digitalnega državljanstva v slovenskih vzgojno-izobraževalnih zavodih. Intervju pa bova izvedla v angleščini. Hi Hans, thank you for joining us today. So to introduce our guest, Hans Martens is the head of digital citizenship at the organization European Schoolnet. Would you like to add anything about yourself to your introduction?
No, I think that's fine. We'll talk a bit more about the work we do.
So. Okay. So I wanted to ask you if you can give us some information about European Schoolnet and what are its primary goals and how it works. And also, how is the organization involved in the project DigiDR?
Okay. So, like you mentioned, I'm the head of digital citizenship at the European Schoolnet. European Schoolnet is a network of ministries of education with a vision to transform education through innovation in teaching and learning. And we do so by working together with our network members. So that's ministries from across Europe, ministries of education. But we also work with a wider variety of both public and private partners. We do a lot of work on policy dialogue, on innovation in schools, professional development for teachers. We also do a lot of work on science education. And for almost a decade now, digital citizenship has become one of the main priorities also for the work we do. And within the work we do on digital citizenship, again, we have a variety of activity lines. So we have a working group with our network members where we try to have a bit more of the strategic overview of the key issues we want to look at within this context. But again, we also have a lot of projects, activity lines on digital skills, on online safety, on digital and media literacy, on digital well-being in a digital world. And I think our overall frame to look at these kind of things is child rights in a digital world. So we feel that all children have the right to be protected, to be empowered, to be respected. And probably I'll end up talking a bit more about that. But we also really want to try to bring that into the classroom. So we really want to think about the skills, the knowledge, the competences they need to thrive in a digital society.
And at what age do you think that digital citizenship should start being taught to children?
I think the sooner you start, the better. That doesn't necessarily mean that you need to give them the digital tools, that they need to spend a lot of time in front of screens. But I think for us, this is really a lifelong learning commitment. And it's all about being critical, children and young people having agency. And I think the digital is everywhere in society, so it would be a bit strange that in schools we ignore it until they are 18, so to speak. So I think even with very young children, you can start talking about these issues. There's a lot of ideas on how best to do that. And again, maybe later in the exchange, we can talk a bit about that. But I think it's really about children at a very young age trying to articulate their own responses to their personal media experiences, trying to develop a bit of critical insight, trying also to be a bit more creative in some of the things they do. And then we hope that by starting at a very early age, they start applying this also in their day-to-day experiences, not just with media, but in a digital society.
But when you say early age, do you mean that maybe like also through the curriculum, this should be approached already in kindergartens, or like at that age, it's more like a parent's job to educate their children on the topic? So when you say young age, do you mean like kindergarten, primary school?
Yeah, so of course there's a different way of approaching it across the different age brands. And actually, if you look at how it evolved over time, I think you see that first it arrived in secondary schools. So if you would now look across the EU at these kind of issues, topics, if they are addressed in education policies, in the curricula, I think you will find it in all countries that it's part of the secondary school curriculum. Increasingly, you see that it's also moving to primary schools. I think that's good because we know that even before they go to secondary school, the digital is really becoming an important point of reference for children and young people. But I think even in kindergarten, and again, that's not to say that you necessarily need to give them a screen, a tool. I think you can start having conversations. Just to give one example, we learn a lot through stories. We learn that there's a character, that they have certain goals, that there might be certain conflicts, and that things you do may have consequences. I think these are the kind of exchanges you can have with young children, even in kindergarten. I think there's a lot of parents who at some point will want to say, here's the device, maybe you can look at something on the screen. So even within that context, even at the youngest age, I think these are the kind of elements that you can start integrating also when in kindergarten you're having exchanges with children and young people. But of course, I would agree that in the early days, the early years, a lot of the responsibility also sits with the parents in terms of the kind of role model they want to be, how they want to approach screen time for their children. So yeah, I would say it's gradual in the sense that the older they get, the more important it is. But still, I think it's really good to start at a very young age and then also to think about learning progression. Like as the child gets older, of course, their capacities will develop. And I think at every age, we need to scaffold them, we need to challenge them, we need to come up with examples of things for them to reflect on. And I think we want to make them more critical, we want to make them creative. And again, it's so omnipresent in everything we do. So I think that's something we also need to look at from a school point of view.
Okay, thank you. And then I was also wondering, what is your view on digitalization in schools and where do you see its correlation to citizenship? So basically, why tackle the question of teaching children how to navigate in the digital age and their exposure to the digital influence through the term of citizenship?
Yeah, so I think for me that there are two separate things. And also if you look at the work we do at European Schoolnet, so I started by referring to the many activity lines we have and also the different departments we have within the organization. So I think there's to start as two different things. So there is me as a child. I want to be or I should be a critical, active citizen. And for that, I need a certain set of competences to be able to do that in the digital world. So that's the work we would typically do on digital literacy, really working on these skills, the knowledge, the critical thinking, so that people, when they are at home, they can take a step back, they can reflect on the media experiences they have, and they make informed decisions in terms of what they want to do. Now, the second one is that in society, as society is digitalizing as a whole, of course, education is part of that too. So alongside the work we have been doing for quite a while on digital citizenship, we have spent a lot of time also thinking about the digitalization of education. And this is also about educational technology being used in a school environment. And that's really very broad. As a school, you will have your own digital infrastructure, so to speak, in terms of how you manage certain processes within your school. Teachers may use digital technology, and this can go from computers to handheld devices. Maybe in some schools, people can bring their own devices. In others, that's not the case. And what we see increasingly is that those two areas are really converging because we understand that the digital technology we bring into a school, more from an educational technology point of view, these are often the same kind of big tech companies that we are learning the children, the young people to be critical about based on the experiences they have in their personal life. So what I see nowadays also in the exchanges we have with our ministries is that whenever there's the promise of a new educational technology coming up, and I think we've seen a lot of that also with AI, we try to take a critical step back and we try to ask the question, what educational benefits will this bring and how will we want to make this to work in practice? And I think this requires exactly the kind of literacy that we want to give also to the children and the young people when we talk about digital citizenship. So we want to take a step back. We want to look at the technology which is there. We want to make a good evaluation of the impact it may have, both positive, both negative. And then, of course, if we find a good way to use it in an educational setting, and if we believe that indeed this will bring educational benefit, that's something that we want to do. But for me, that's something that I've really seen converging, because the same big companies which are giving us our day-to-day media experiences now also end up being the same companies who have a lot of new tools and ideas on how to innovate education. So I think we always need to bring that critical mindset, just like a digital citizenship, to make sure that we make informed decisions before we get into action. But then if we really believe that the technology can bring added value, then that's something we need to embrace. And that's the kind of exchange we try to have with our network of ministries. And then also we try to give guidance to schools and to teachers on how to do that in practice.
Okay, thank you. So also usage of AI for like teaching by teachers in schools, you think can be beneficial, but like if like in the bigger picture, it improves the lesson.
Yeah. So we often get the question: can we use AI in schools? And then the question is: what will you use it for? Which tool are you planning to use? Are you going to use it to prepare some of the lessons you want to give? Are you going to use it as part of the teaching and the learning? Do you want to give it directly to the children and the young people? Are you going to use it to assess the quality of the work we do? So I think, again, if you look at society at large, there are so many developments. I don't think we want to miss the boat, so to speak. So I think also as an education system, we need to be open-minded. We look at these developments coming our way. But we need to ask the right questions. We don't just need to do it because there's someone who's saying that this will revolutionize teaching and learning. We need to think, how do we want to integrate it into practice? And we need to make a number of more ethical reflections in terms of how to use it in a safe and a responsible way. And I think increasingly so, we also need to think a bit about legal consequences. So I think we had something similar with GDPR. It's the kind of thing that all of a sudden there was GDPR and everyone was worrying, how should we adjust as an organization? So that's not just for schools, it's for media broadcasters for sure. It's for many people who at some point in time work with personal data, which is, I think, basically everyone. And I think the same is now true also with AI. There are certain rules also at EU level. For example, from a legal point of view, using AI to really evaluate the quality of the work of a pupil and making decisions on that basis, that's actually a high-risk decision. So if you ask me, should a teacher or can a teacher use AI, there's a lot of questions to be asked. Part of it is about what are they going to use it for, but there's also the wider ethical, legal framework. We want to make sure that the teachers are still in control, that they have oversight, that we make sure that the rights of the children are respected. So that's a lot of questions to be asked. And again, I think that's what we try to do also as a network of ministries of education. If I was a teacher, I would be overwhelmed. There are so many things to reflect on. So I think a lot of these decisions doesn't need to be made by the teacher. It's more by the school. And even for the school, there are so many decisions which we can try to centralize more at national level, maybe even at European level, just to make it easier for them also to navigate the landscape and find the good balance between protection on the one hand, but on the other hand also empowerment, participation. So I think that's the direction of travel, but it also means that there are no simple answers to binary yes or no questions.
Okay, then I was also wondering, because like digitalization can be a bit hard on older teachers who don't grow up with such technology. So I was wondering, what do you think are some good approaches to enable older teachers to be able to also participate in teaching children digital citizenship?
Yeah, so what I like about digital citizenship is that there is the digital and there is also the citizenship. So in any case, those older teachers, maybe they are less experienced with the digital, but actually they are more experienced with the citizenship. So I think whenever an older teacher, and I think there's not such a thing as the older teacher, I think there's a lot of diversity and variety also within that kind of group, and some of the more innovative, inspiring teachers we also work with, they're actually part of that older group. So I think we also need to be careful not just to say that they are all the same, but for every older teacher who is a bit overwhelmed, who feels this is a lot, this is not for me, I would say a lot of it is really not about the tools, but it's about the critical thinking, it's about the agency. And I would say that they are more experienced than some of their more junior colleagues, because they have seen a lot of new tools being brought into schools. So I don't think they should worry that they don't know enough, because I think they have a lot of knowledge, expertise to bring. This being said, of course, there is also the digital aspect. And even for me, and it's part of my day-to-day work, I find it sometimes challenging to keep up with all the latest trends and developments. So in that regard, I think we need to support people. The best way to support teachers is by pre-service, in-service training for all the teachers. It means that we need to make sure that we continue to provide them opportunities to learn. And I think what is also really important, and that's also something we try to do as part of the work, so we often talk about a whole school approach, which means you want to involve the whole school community, including all people who are part of the schools. So you may end up saying, as an older teacher, maybe this is not my key priority or not the one thing to do. But I think because the digital has become so important, you cannot really ignore it. But the message to them is, you are not on your own. There's a whole school of people. We need to work on these topics across subjects in a cross-curricular way. And it's really about teachers working together and also having these exchanges with their pupils. So I understand some of the older teachers are overwhelmed and they're a bit like, here we go again. But I don't think they should worry. And I think we also need to build on their experience, the kind of knowledge and insight they can bring in terms of what it is really to bring those critical thinking skills. And we need to work together on these kind of topics, because they are so important for children and young people in a digital society.
And then I also saw that you work in coordinating InSafe network of safer internet centers and lead the project Better Internet for Kids. So can you tell us a bit more about your work in these two areas?
Yeah, so I think until now in most of what I've been talking about, I've really focused on UN as a network of ministries of education, and we talked a lot about formal education, schools, teachers. But I think for us in the work we do, and that's also visible in the kind of partnerships we have, this is really a whole society approach. Better Internet for Kids is a good example. So it's a really important European Commission initiative. So we implement the Better Internet for Kids platform on behalf of the European Commission, and it's basically in line with, without going into too much detail, it's in line with the Commission's Better Internet for Kids strategy, which is their vision to aim for age-appropriate digital services where every child in Europe feels protected, empowered, and respected. So again, that's the child right approach that I mentioned. So we want to create a safe space so that children and young people feel protected. We want to empower them so that they feel they have the right skills, the literacy to be part of that environment. But we also want to respect them, and that's the point on participation. We are making so many decisions which are having a direct impact on children and young people on their day-to-day life. So we need to make sure that we also listen to their view, that they take on board their opinions, and that we also build on that when putting into place policies. So that's briefly said, the Better Internet for Kids initiative, which we implement on behalf of the Commission. And to make that more concrete, We have a platform website. We run a number of high-level campaigns, such as Safe Internet Day, which is taking place every year in February, not just in Europe, but across the world. We organize annual conferences like the Safe Internet Forum, which this year is taking place in December, with a focus on why age matter, because there's a lot of ongoing discussions, not just on the protection of minors, but also on things like age assurance, age verification. So we do all of these things on behalf of the Commission. But as part of that, we also coordinate a network of safe internet centers, because this is not just Europe. This is also about its member states, so to speak. And in every European country, we have a safe internet center, which brings together, again, different organizations. It can be ministries, it can be civil society organizations, and they cover a number of functions. So they raise awareness, they provide helpline counseling services, and they also provide possibilities for hotline reporting. So that's when someone encounters illegal content that they can report it. So the European Network of Safe Internet Centers is something we animate. We do that by bringing them together, having a lot of exchanges, trying to understand what's happening across the member states. And we believe that the best way to do it is to do this together, because even if there is a lot of diversity across the EU, we see that the kind of risks, the challenges for the children and young people, they are broadly similar. And we try to work together so that at national level, we each time have this point of reference, so that not just the children and the young people, but also the teachers, the parents, and the wider range of stakeholders, that they feel supported to work on a better etiquette for children and young people.
Okay. And then what are some key changes and developments that the organization European SchoolNet has done since it was established in 1997?
Well, I would say that the establishment of the Digital Citizenship Department was one of the key changes. So I think in any case that the topics we've been discussing here, but also the topics we've been discussing as part of the Council of Europe conference on digital citizenship education, I think they've only become more prominent. So I think the level of priority and the fact that this really now has become something that has so much attention, that's really, for me, a big shift. And that's also something we see at European level in terms of the political attention it is getting. So, for example, every year the President of the European Commission is giving a State of the Union speech. I remember a time where it would be very unlikely that the topics that we work on would be mentioned there. Well, this time it really was one of the headlines in terms of the European Union, we need to do a better job supporting parents also in raising children and young people in the digital world. And I think that's also linked to some of the societal shifts we see. I think there is this ongoing tension with big tech having their platforms and Europe trying to come up with an answer. And something which has really changed is that we moved from more like a self-regulation approach to then now really putting in place a set of rules that we feel the big companies need to respect. So I think really this dynamic of, on the one hand, trying to keep and hold big tech accountable, but then within that context, really working across society all together to empower and respect children and young people. And the kind of prominence this is getting, I think for me, this is one of the main changes we have seen. And I think we've been grateful also to be part of that movement and to be able to contribute to that, not just us as an organization, but us in dialogue on the one hand with our network of ministries of education, but then also us coordinating on behalf of the Commission this network of safe internet centers.
Okay, thank you. We also mentioned, so like introducing a bit more digitalization in schools, how it has positive and negative benefits. And I just wanted to ask about the potential negative aspect of it. If you think that maybe like the enhancing the use of digital tools in class could amplify the risk of children developing internet addiction disorders because of spending more time online and it being like more crucial for them to do their schoolwork with it.
Yeah. So again, I think it's a topic which has received a lot of attention in the last few years. And again, it's something we also see in our exchanges with our network of Ministry of Education. I think you probably will be aware that in many countries, some form of banning of, for example, mobile phones in a school environment has been put in place, because I think at some point, ministries and schools, and often it's also parents, they felt we need to take a step back, sort of put things on hold a bit, because this is really having an impact on our schools and we don't really know how to deal with this. So I think there's a lot of concern. I think there's also a bit of a risk that we simplify things by going for two simple solutions. So I think banning mobile phones is really not the answer to the problem. And that's also something you now see in a school where the problems continue to exist, but they just move, even just like last week on the national radio of the country where I come from. There was like this item where the teachers and the parents were discussing that now that the mobile phones are gone, actually the social media behavior moved to the school laptops and they then bring them home. And while the parents still knew how to control the mobile devices, actually the operational control for the laptops sit with the school. So they find it now difficult to regulate that time at home because people are using devices from the school at home. So I think it just shows the complexity, and I think that's also what I would want to respond to the question of potential negative consequences. So again, if schools take a step back and before they start using digital technology, they reflect on the educational benefit and how they want to use it, and if they make sure that within their school certain choices are being made in terms of what is being acquired in terms of the devices, the licenses, and if they then set clear rules in discussion, not just with the teachers, but ideally also talking with the pupils, with the parents, then I don't think we need to worry too much about digital technology being present in a school. I think what matters is that people have taken a step back and can continue taking that kind of critical reflection to it, and then I think we can definitely use it for a lot of educational benefit. And then in addition, when we are in school, we need to talk about these issues in terms of excessive screen time or all the other kind of risks, such as cyberbullying, the kind of harmful content that children and young people can experience. So I think we need to have these critical discussions in a school environment, because even if you keep the mobile phones out, that's not going to keep the problems out, because if someone is being cyberbullied just before they get in school, then for sure that will also impact their well-being within the school environment. And then the final thing is that this is not just about the school, this is about society. I think there are certain things which are just not okay, and that's also why we have these legal frameworks like the DSA, where there is also specific guidance to some of the big online platforms in terms of what we think as a society are the appropriate measures that they should take to make sure that on their platforms there are the appropriate levels of security, of safety and privacy. So I think if we can hold these companies accountable and if we find a good way within a school environment to make informed decisions about digital technology use and the kind of teaching practices we want to combine, then I don't think we need to panic. I think we need to be positive. I think we can focus on all the positives that digital technology can bring. But equally, we shouldn't be naive. So we need to bring critical thinking skill, and we really need to think, how can children, young people and teachers use this for positive things to happen?
Okay, thank you. So with this question, we will be wrapping up the interview. Thank you, Hans, for your answers and also doing the interview. Hvala tudi vam, poslušalke in poslušalci, da ste nas spremljali. Adio.
Intervju Radia Študent.